Hey, what's up, college baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the 11.7 podcast, where we're here to recap weekend number six of the college baseball season. We will preview the midweek at the very end, but we have a ton of storylines. We got a lot of just crazy action. I went on a little work trip that turned into a college baseball tour up in North Carolina. Jack joined along. Jack got to call a game too. And as Demetrius shows his Modelo light, drinking on the job tonight. But anyways, it was a fun weekend. We got some great stories to tell. We got some great interviews this past weekend. And yeah, we'll just keep you guys all up to date there. There was some huge series like South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Clemson, Florida State, LSU, Florida. Like the list goes on and on. And we'll break down those series too. And of course, we always start the episode off with our home field apparel team of the week. And let me share my screen now. If you guys are watching on YouTube, we're going to show you home field apparel's website and the team of the week, the Fighting Gamecocks of South Carolina. Hand up. I came out with a bold statement a week ago from today, a very bold statement, and said South Carolina was the second worst team in the SEC.
They God had no fight. Damn, that
they had no passion. When they played against Ole Miss last week. And sure enough, they crapped all over my head and swept the team that I said was probably a top two or three team in the country, maybe even number one, playing the best baseball. They swept the Vanderbilt Commodores right in my face. It was so bad that Jack and I avoided driving through Columbia, South Carolina on our way home. We took the back roads of North Carolina down the coast.
Should we really say why, though? It was a long weekend. We wanted to avoid the parade traffic for the party they were going to throw me for standing up for them last week when I said they were going to be A-OK and that Ethan Petry needed a big-time Founders Park moment like he delivered against Paul Skeens last year. But the parade, Columbia, I'm so sorry. Founders, I will be back.
Right. Yeah, hand up. I was dead wrong. Like, this is probably the most embarrassed I've been in a long time on this show. And I embarrass myself a good bit. But at the end of the day, it's all about laughing at yourself. Don't take yourself too seriously. And with the cherry on top, go buy yourself a South Carolina Gamecocks home field apparel shirt using our promo code CWS24, homefieldapparel.com. 15% off your first purchase there. And I don't know what it is about this shirt right here, the South Carolina Williams-Brice Stadium tee. This is fire. Like, this is amazing. They got tons of different options. Bomber jackets always hit.
We've got
good feedback from a lot of people that have used the promo code and love the quality of the merch. They do it the best over there at Home Field Apparel. So, y'all go check them out there.
Why do you think Carolina's feeling peachy? Did they win the Peach Bowl in 1969 or something?
That's a good question. I don't know. If I knew that, you guys should be worried. If I knew that South Carolina won the Peach Bowl in 1969, y'all should be worried about me. Because that means I'm not being a good dad. That means I'm not being a good college baseball analyst. I got a lot wrong with me if I knew that. So, but boys, let's just kick off right. Let's just talk about this Vanderbilt South Carolina series real quick. I know there's a lot of people that are wanting us to talk about the mid-major power rankings that we just released. I know there's a lot of people that want to talk about Florida run rule in LSU today and winning the series and how Jack Caglione is like the best all-around college baseball player I've seen, and I think a lot of people have seen in 20 years, maybe close to all time. And then you got like Charlie Condon knocking on the door with like 17 homers already this year, three homer day. It's just kind of crazy right now that it's only March 24th, and you can start feeling the storylines building up, not only in the SEC, but the ACC as well. The Big 12 is a jumble, like it's just jumbled up. There's so much parity in college baseball. Teams will sweep one week, get swept the next.
Unbelievable, dude. Bipolar as fuck. The college baseball is so bipolar right now. Talk about Troy, talk about South Alabama, talk about Vanderbilt, talk about Florida State, talk about like South Carolina, talk about, I mean, Alabama. All these teams are showing up one weekend and sleepwalking the next weekend.
Yep. But that's why the sport's so great. It's so unpredictable. unlike this college basketball tournament that I've been watching, where it's the chalkiest March Madness tournament I've ever seen. I think there was one upset in the round of 64, and that was Clemson beating Baylor. This tournament's turning into like a snooze fest. No exciting moments. Very few exciting moments. But I can guarantee you this, when college baseball regionals roll around, there's going to be upsets. It's not going to be chalk. You're going to see an Oral Roberts make it to the a team like that making it to the College World Series. It's just a completely different tournament, way more exciting. College basketball sucks.
I think I'm going to say it right now. I don't care about college basketball, so sure, I agree. I'm going to say it right now. 2-4 seeds make super regionals this year. Saying it right now. Not one, but two.
So you're going to one-up my call from last year where I said a 4 seed was going to make Omaha.
2-4 seeds are making a super regional. I've seen enough.
Well, I think I love it. There's this question, too, where, like, there are teams like a Florida, for example, who looks like absolutely nails in run-ruling the reigning national champions today, but, like, refuse to win midweek games. Is that the power in parity? Or is that, like, a team that just can't figure it out? I know we talked about that a ton last week. But right. I don't know. Like even like the Sun Belt, or even, dude, the Big East has gotten off to a crazy hot start. Like, I just think we're seeing the best product of college baseball that maybe this morning.
I agree. But wait, weren't we just talking about Vanderbilt, South Carolina series? Now we're talking about
running back on us.
No, it was my fault. I think I ran it off of Ben, and then you ran it off me. We got to circle back.
I'll circle back here. Look, the sweep at home has got to feel great for South Carolina and South Carolina fans, right? And they, instead of being, you know, they go 1-2 in Oxford last week and look dead. I pronounced them dead. I thought that they were going to be just not a good team in the SEC. They go and sweep at home, and like the sweep was so convincing that it has me like, this is an overreaction possibly, but it has me thinking like South Carolina, like they could win the SEC. That's how much it switched bipolar. I'm telling you, think about it. Like, if you can take a team as hot as Vanderbilt's been at home and beat them so bad that like there was no close games, like it felt like Founders Park was rocking, like they were smashing balls. Now it's like, is South Carolina going to win this? Not win that. Maybe that compete for an SEC title, or are they going to be like a back and forth team all year?
I'll tell you why they can. Because Eli Jones has turned into a premier Friday night guy. He was filthy game one yesterday. You have to have the guy in the SEC that can deliver when the lights are on like a Thursday or Friday night. And he's turned into that. And like I said last week, not to toot my own horn, but Cole Messina and Ethan Petcher are going to be themselves. Like, they were going to wake up, and they did. And they did it in a massive way. But the supporting cast and like what they're throwing out on Sundays is what has surprised me a ton. And that's why I think, to your point, they absolutely can go in the SEC.
Yeah, I think they're a real team. I take back everything I said. I think they're a real team. They showed a lot of fight. They showed a lot of passion. I hope my spiel from March 17th, that YouTube clip, I hope it's the clip that they showed the team. And like, that's going to be the first clip of their Omaha championship parade. Like, they're going to show that and be like, you know what? Ben Upton fired us up. He was dead right. We were playing dead. Now, that's not going to happen, but
you know what?
I can dream a little bit.
So funny about all of this, in my opinion, besides the play on the field, you said they sucked, they didn't, whatever. That's whatever. That's sports. You talk about sports, you look stupid one weekend, you look smart the next. We all do it. But one of my favorite clips I've ever clipped is Gary Gainey. Post-save celebration. That guy literally said, fuck you, Ben Upton. You want to see some energy? You want to see some fight? Yeah. I'll show you some of that. Ba, 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 ba.
Yeah, Garrett Gainey, shout out to his brother. I've been in talks with him for close to 2 weeks now about getting his bro a little pencil talk guy. And then he goes out. And by the way, like this, that wasn't a one-time deal, right? Like, he's been doing this all year. Like, he's the kind of guy like that back-end bully with like, pardon my French, like a fuck you fastball. He's like, he's like that in a down 10 game and an up 10 game.
So
But he's like contagious, right? Like even Messina's hitting a double celly. And like
for the people that are wondering what we're talking about on the YouTube.
X down the door, automatic machine gun. Sick.
That is awesome.
Yeah, we're showing it right now on the YouTube. So if you guys haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube. Watch our episodes. Like we show our face. Show some cool video clips during the YouTube as well. But I know our bread and butter is podcast. This is going to come out in podcast form. But we're just trying to offer more more ways to, you know, contribute to college baseball.
A little bit of diversity.
Yeah, a little diversity. Anyways, how worried are you guys about Vanderbilt?
By the way, can I say something real quick? I would pay a lot of money for that hoodie.
We'll just steal it. We'll just steal it next time we're in Nashville.
How can we just appreciate that hoodie?
Yes.
Is it just me?
I'm with you so much that to answer Ben's question, they've got such swaggy stuff that no, I'm not worried about Vanderbilt. Not in the slightest. This was much more to do about South Carolina than it was to do about Vanderbilt.
Wait, time out. I'm rating this hoodie literally a 10 out of 10. I love that hoodie so much.
Let me show you, this is a 7 out of 10 max hoodie. It's a cool hoodie. It says Vandy Boys in person.
The script font, Vandy Boy, big ass Nike swoosh, American flag on the side. What are you talking about?
That's a 7 out of 10 max. I'm sorry.
Get out of here.
7 out of 10 max. I've seen better. It would be cooler if it just said Vandy on it, to be honest. The Vandy Boys part.
Why do you guys hate Vandy Boy? Why? Jack, you brought that up a couple weeks ago. You don't like it. Why?
Massive Corbin fan. I told you, I easily persuaded. I don't know. It just seems kind of cheesy to me.
I
understand that there's this culture. I don't know.
You got to remember when it was created. It was the Carson Fulmer. It was the Dansby Swanson. It was the Tony Kemp. It was the Tyler Beatty. It was the
Xander Wheel. They're all stars and they're all
They were the Vandy Boys.
Yeah, right? They're the blue blood program. But all I hear when I hear Vandy Boys is Fetty Wap when it's like Remy Boys or whatever the fuck he did. That's all I think about. So
you're just being a hater, dude. You're just being a hater.
Dude, I'm a massive Corbin fan. I'm gonna go sit
in the sauna. Corbin fan and Vanderbilt fan are two different or can be mutually exclusive.
No, I'm a big Vandy fan. I think they're nasty. I think they're gonna be A-okay.
Vanderbilt SID, if you're watching this or listening right now, I have your back. So I would love a hoodie in my mailbox in the near future. I have your back.
Shout out to my boy Will Owen, who helped me get all those interviews. Alon Espinal, absolute monster behind the plate. Big fan. I'm telling you.
The Pencil Talk versus Penn Talk rivalry is real right now.
He's so real.
Already 13 minutes in bickering at each other. Last thing we're going to say about this series, do you guys think that South Carolina is the better team, or did Vanderbilt run into a Founders Park that was a little hostile, a little rowdy, and just maybe Vanderbilt struggled?
I think that series is literally exactly what we saw last year when they beat Florida. They swept Florida at home. We said put a number one next to their name and put some respect on that South Carolina Gamecock. I think it's very similar. I think they're going to struggle this year. And now, look, here we are again making another hot take, and I'm probably going to look stupid in 3 weeks from now. But I think that this is one of those series where it just shows you the depth of the SEC. If you don't show up one weekend, you get your ass kicked. I don't think this weekend showed so much about how good South Carolina is. We all knew they're good, but great, like Arkansas level, Oregon State level, Florida level. I mean, I'd have to see more. I'd have to see more consistency out of them because they had a chance against Clemson, didn't do it. They had a chance against Ole Miss, didn't do it. So I think this is more of just showing how good the SEC is week in, week out, not so much that South Carolina is a top 10 team in the country.
Before we move off of them, I felt like all three of us were on the same page about the two. I felt like sleepers going into this SEC season. A&M, South Carolina. A&M has lived up to some of those, like, sleepy expectations that we kind of praised. It's an elite offense. The pitching has stepped up. They beat the teams they were supposed to, and they moved into SEC play and have kind of done such. To me, what we saw from South Carolina this weekend shows that they can be like that is an elite offense. Like when they are 1-9 deep as hell and Will Tippett sitting in the nine hole and Dylan Brewer, a Clemson transfer, is going backside. Yeah. Yeah. Like the smooth lefty swing, they're deep. Now I'm getting excited about this team because the pitching is better than I think a lot of people said. And when I talk to a guy like Roman Kimball, who we coined as Roy Oswalt, like it's like a guy like Dylan Eskew was hurt last year. People just see numbers. He's better this year. He's healthy. Eli Jones is far better than I think anyone thought. So I think yes, the SEC is really deep. And if South Carolina has a couple blow up innings like they did a week ago, they can get their tits kicked in a little bit too, but they can be really elite. Like we talked about Texas A&M as well.
I'm going to put a question out. I want both of your reaction. All right. Or thoughts. When you look at Arkansas, what do you think of? Consistency, just consistent all the damn time.
I think immediately of just like great pitching.
Yeah, okay. Pitching is but over the last 3 or 4 years, what do you think of?
Oh, but it's a program. Yeah.
All right. When you think of some of these programs, you think they're so damn consistent. When you think of South Carolina, you think, oh my God, this team could be really good. But the next weekend, they look horrendous. Arkansas, you never really see the horrendous. You never just see, oh my God, this team is so bad this weekend. Are they even good? Is that a testament to the head coach and the coaching staff?
I think that's I don't know, dude. That's a tough question. Like, I think that might be a unanswerable question, if that makes
sense. But why can't they be more consistent? That's what I'm thinking.
My answer is no, and only because I don't think it has anything to do with the coaching staff. I think they're in a great spot. We asked the same questions about Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Are we questioning their coaching staffs?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think Lemonis is the long-term answer there. That's just personal opinion. I like him. He's a great guy, like whatever. But just objectively speaking, when you come in and win a national championship with a previous regime player, and then all of a sudden you fall off a cliff, something's got to give there, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a whole other conversation.
Anyway, back to my point. I think coaching staff do play a part in consistency in player and game prep during the week practice prep. Like, I think coaching staff keep your players' mindset even keel, don't ride the wave up and down, stuff like that. So I do. When I think of South Carolina, I think, is Mark Kingston a bad coach? No, not at all by any means. He is where he is because he's good at what he does. But it's like consistency. Where is it? Why do some programs have it? Some don't. Like South Carolina can be just as good as Arkansas. I think South Carolina can out-recruit Arkansas. I think their brand holds that much weight where they could out-recruit Arkansas mano a mano. But Arkansas is the one that's the consistent program year in and year out.
All right, so after this, I'm trying to answer this. We got to move on because we've spent a lot of time on this. But like consistency is great and all, but I guarantee you, like I would, if I was an SEC fan, I would rather see the up and downs, if that means like win a national championship. Like think for example, like Kevin O'Sullivan at Florida, he's been very inconsistent. Like his teams do not show up sometimes; they do show up sometimes. But he won a national championship 6 years ago. And like almost won one last year. Like the programs that go up and down, I don't think you can complain about. Mississippi State, Ole Miss, they both won national championships. They've been up and down. A team like Arkansas has not won a national championship. Like
what about Oregon State? Programs, a team like Oregon State.
I mean, I think that they're kind of inconsistent recently.
I mean,
they haven't made it to Omaha since 2018.
I'll put it like this, and then let's kick it to the rest of the SEC, and we'll use this as a perfect transition. I think the inconsistencies that you see in the SEC are a testament to the fact that you're damn near playing a double-A schedule. You get everybody's best every weekend. You're looking at top five rounders every Friday night. It's impossible to be perfect in college baseball, and it sure as hell is impossible to be perfect against the best competition in the world.
That's why I'm bringing this up. Arkansas went nearly perfect, and then they got beat by NC State in 2021. Hey, this is the College Baseball Podcast. We are not watching college basketball right now.
What happened? Well, Jack just made the biggest face of all time.
You're right. College basketball doesn't matter, but if they hit a three to send it to overtime, A&M Houston with just 0.4 seconds on the clock, we're going to overtime. Buzzer beater.
Hold on. I'm way behind you. I got 1.2 seconds left. They're just about to inbound the ball.
Should we talk a little A&M baseball?
He may
know.
That's pretty sick. All right, let's do this. We're gonna jump away from the SEC. I'm gonna go down the road from South Carolina. The biggest weekend series, in my opinion, was this Florida State versus Clemson series. And I'm embarrassed it took us 20 minutes to get there. But I mean, sometimes we just gotta rattle off some opinions before we dive into the the stats and like everything that happened in the series.
You gotta bite through the bun to get to the meat.
Yeah, right. So Demetri, you did a really good job covering it on Twitter. This series was the craziest series I can remember as far as having huge leads and blowing them. And it just happened that Florida State blew three really big leads. I was looking at like the 6-4-3 charts thing. Florida State had a 99.9% chance to win on Saturday, and they gave up seven or eight in the ninth and lost
eight.
Yeah. But the weekend
8-1 and lost. Yeah.
Yeah. Blake Wright won the weekend. Over his last, what did he have? 21 RBIs this weekend, two grand slams.
This week.
Yeah, this week, 21 RBIs in four games. Every time he stepped to the plate, he made freaking damage. And he put the Clemson team on his back for the most part. I mean, he was the run producer, the run driver in. Like, he was the guy that they leaned on. And Florida State's bullpen looked very bad. Like, embarrassingly bad for an undefeated team coming into that weekend. But again, it was the formula that we talked about. Every time an undefeated team goes into a place on the road, tough environment, it feels like they always lose two out of three at least. And we said it last podcast, unfortunately, Florida State had a chance to win all three games and they just didn't. So what does this say for you guys, for both teams, Florida State and Clemson?
For Clemson, it showed me they're good. That 18-1 loss to Kennesaw State, fluke. Who cares? Don't pretend it never happened. Because for me, that all I think about, like, Clemson's good, but like they struggled against these teams, got their shit kicked in by Kennesaw State, stuff like that. So I'm like thinking, like, is Clemson good? How good are they? This weekend showed me they can hit with anybody in the country. Pitching, I'm still skeptical on their pitching. It's gonna be fine. Not every team has a big league pitching staff. So for that, that's Clemson. But for me, Florida State, don't get it twisted. This is a really good team that just got their bullpen exposed, like, at the worst of the worst. I mean, three fly balls were to left field. The hill at Clemson ate three dudes alive. They missed three fly balls in left field. The guys, like, whatever. And the wind was blowing, whatever. So, I mean, I don't think you can sit here and say, oh, Florida State sucks. D1 baseball was right, not having them ranked. They are a top 25 team. They just got to get their bullpen figured out. Maybe they brought the wrong guys in at the wrong time, whatever it is. Because this lineup hits with anybody in the country as well.
Yeah, I think to me, too, I think we might be the ultimate jinx. I said that I didn't believe in the star power up at Clemson, South Carolina. I didn't think they had it. Mr. Wright, Will Taylor, who's an absolute phenom. They've got absolute dogs in that lineup. I do think there are a lot of question marks still, like, on the front end. Like, who do I fear on Friday night when they toe the rubber? But what a game of the week, like, game of the year type candidate vibes. And they do it twice in 2 days. That shit was crazy. And I'm hesitant because the only thing that I'm scared to do now is Clemson's got to be the number one team in the country, right? And the minute that we say this, I fully expect them to lose five straight because that's what we do on this podcast. But they look like the number one team in the country right now.
Well, dude, it's actually kind of crazy because right now, this is why college baseball is in such a prime spot. You can make an argument for three teams in three different conferences all to be the number one team in the nation. Clemson out of the ACC, Arkansas out of the SEC, and Oregon State out of the Pac-12. All three have good resumes, like really solid resumes. They win games that they're supposed to, plus games they're not supposed to. And they all three are just constructed so differently. Clemson's more of like a balanced team, in my opinion, maybe slightly leaning offensive. Arkansas, pitching heavy, offense is getting around finally. We think And then Oregon State puts up 15 runs against everybody. Pitching staff is just a little.
Dude, every episode with this shit.
What happened?
Shit scares me. I'm like looking around, like, what is happening?
Was it no, Alexa?
Yeah, it was Alexa.
Wow. Oh, well. Well, we need a fourth chair, so we'll just have Alexa on here. But anyways, like, I mean, I think it's going to be a good argument for all three teams. Right now, personally, I think Arkansas still deserves to be number one. You go to Auburn, win two out of three, could have won a third. They could have swept. But this Clemson team, only two losses on the year. This is a team that just refuses to lose.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that South Carolina series, they came back. Andrew Schufo off of Gainey, walk-off bomb. They tied it late in the game. It was just very similar. And then the Duke series. Duke had a lead. Clemson came back, tied it up, held on, and won late in the game. I mean, it just showed the team never out of it.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is, like, 30 minutes before – was it 30 minutes before or 30 minutes after when Duke blew that 7-run lead in the ninth to NC State? After. They both happened within like minutes of each other. It's crazy.
Yeah, Pennington hit two home runs in one inning. They go 6 runs in the ninth and like literally 30 minutes after in the same damn conference, same caliber of stars. That game was equally as wild. But I want to shout out the Riz God too, making the Clemson graphic. I mean, are we? I know they retracted it, but still kind of dope.
Wait, what?
Getting your tweet up on the Clemson graphic.
Oh. Let's see if I can find it. I think it's right here.
For those listening along.
For the people Clemson that are wondering what the hell DeLong Chomp is talking about. Oh, yeah. Here it is. Right there. Oh, shit. I'm not sharing. So basically, yeah, I mean, they put out a graphic, a bunch of different people shock us, Clemson, 6-4-3, Aaron Fitt, Kendall Rogers, and then there's us in the top right. Holy shit. Somebody didn't like that, and they deleted that graphic and put up this one with no tweets. I'm not a fan of that. Cool. Stick with your gun.
Yeah. Let's move away from the Clemson series. That was awesome. I was the only one to pick him to win two out of three in the weekend series. Pick him. Thank you very much. But the next biggest series, and maybe it was equally as big as the other ones, was down at the box. Like Alex Box Stadium, LSU hosting Florida. People are livid on Twitter, including myself, I guess I can add myself there, that a 9-loss Florida team is still ranked in the top 10. But after losing Friday, I mean, pretty handily. They come back and win Saturday in extras. Cags hits an extra inning homer that was, I don't know the exit velocity, but it looked like 115 off the bat. Line drive, piss missile over right center. And he comes back today, pitches lights out, hits a backside homer off the scoreboard. I mean, he was just locked in, ready to go. Like, he was the guy that everybody needed. And, like, everybody was expecting this Florida team to play like this all year. Run rule LSU. LSU's second run rule on a Sunday in SEC play. They got run ruled last week by Mississippi State. So they really need to figure out that Thatcher Hurd start on Sundays. But anyways, like, I think this showed a lot about the Florida Gators. Like, sure, in the midweeks, they're going to sleepwalk and they're not going to care. But when it comes to the weekend, they find a way to win two out of three every single weekend. A lot of the credit goes to Jack Caglione on Sundays. They just don't lose on Sundays. He's a guaranteed win right now. He'll go 6-7 innings, 2 runs or less, and strike out a handful, like a couple handfuls, 8-10. It's crazy.
I mean, it's the best player in the country. Guy hit the home run today. Guy throws 7 innings of 2-run ball. Weekend before, he went, I don't know, 6 innings of 1-run ball, maybe something like that. Like, and I think he hit better when he's pitching. That's what I'm starting to notice. I don't know if it's actually statistically true, but it seems like it.
Last year, for sure. It felt like that last year. I don't have any stats to back it up, but the eyeball test, it feels like it.
I mean, this Florida team's good, man. They're loaded in the lineup 1-9 as well. I mean, Ty Evans, Colby Shelton, Jack Caglione, and some other. Yeah, I mean, I think the Florida team is good, man. I at this point, we just say, fuck it. Who cares about Tuesday?
Yeah.
Does it worry you, though, that if they get into the loser's bracket, like, that Tuesday is really like the game four in a regional. Like, you have to win that game four if you're in the loser's bracket. Who's going to step up and win it? That's, like, that's really the only importance for me for midweeks. For
but these, I think these top 10 teams,
like, if they lose in the midweeks, if they do lose in the postseason, they're going to have to rely on those midweek guys to win a game or two. So,
I mean, you remember what's his name, the lefty. He came in that Oklahoma game. Starter got knocked out in the first. They gave up like four runs in that regional or that game. Lefty came in and threw nine shutout innings out of the bullpen. You remember that, Ben?
Yeah.
He came in through nine shutout. Florida won, forced the game seven in that regional. So I think experience will come down when it gets to May, weather warms up. I think Florida will be just fine. Right now, they're getting exposed, but they're getting meaningful failures, if that makes sense. They're failing a lot now. At that point, you're just like, dude, whatever. If I fail again, I've been failing all year. There's no pressure on them to get the experience. I think they'll be just fine when we get to May in June.
That series was really fun, too, because there's, like, future major leaguers in both dugouts, like, almost double-digit dudes, too. Like, you were all over Neely coming out of the back end today. Like, he was nails. And I have a question I want to stage, but I'm not worried about LSU. And I know a lot of people in Baton Rouge are probably starting to get a little concerned. My only fear is that, unfortunately, they have to go to Arkansas next week. That's going to be a problem. The schedule
gets tough.
You're not worried? Can you tell me why you're not worried?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because, like, I think everyone knows, like, their dog. Like, Bear Jones is a freak. Like, he ran a bunch of balls out. Tommy White's raking. Travinsky's, like, leading the country in OBP and select OPS. Like, they're fine. The only problem I'm worried about is I think Thatcher Hurd actually looked pretty good today. I'm worried about the back end bullpen on Sundays. Like, they throw their best guys behind Holman and jump on Friday, Saturday. But, like, a guy like Josh Pearson to me, who plays right, plays left, played second base today, hit a backside double against Cags in like the sixth to lead off at any. Like, those guys are developing at a really rapid rate that, like, I really like their lineup. So I'm cool. I'm really not worried about LSU. The guys around Cags this weekend were incredible. Like, Ty Evans was nuts. Like, that was the Ty Evans that we saw dominate in Omaha last year. That was a reason that Florida was able to fly through their side of the bracket. So I'm really impressed with the rest of the lineup with Florida. I don't understand why they look so fucking measly during the midweeks. But again, to y'all's point, who cares? I'm interested. They talked about it a little bit on the broadcast today, and we don't have to touch on it long. Does Cags 2A at the next level? Like, is he a Shohei? Is he good enough to pitch? Because today he walked six today, but then you look up and he's only given up two hits, and you're like, does this play? I'm really interested to see what happens.
I
talked to a scout this weekend about that. Like, what do you think about I was like, what do you think about Cags? Like, is he going to go number one overall because people think he might be on the path that Shohei? And he basically broke it down to me like this. You're buying the bat. Like, you're buying the athlete. You're buying the bat. If the pitching, like, works out, and if his organization, I'm not going to say what team he was with, but his organization wants him to pitch and try to do both. But he's like, the pitching will be the first to go. Like, it doesn't matter how bad he's hitting or how good he's pitching. If he feels like he can't handle both, or the organization feels like you can't handle both, then they're going to cut out pitching, even if he's doing it better at that level. Then they're like, all right, focus on hitting only. So you're buying the bat and you're buying the athlete. So, like, sure, I think there's going to be some teams that look at having him, because you think about it, he's a first rounder in the mound, he's a first rounder at the plate. If you have a first overall pick, you're basically getting two first rounders for the price of one. Now, you might have to pay a little extra, but it's like having two first round picks here. So I think they're gonna let him try. It would be hard for an organization to draft him and not let him try, because it's like, why are you paying him millions and millions of dollars? But the thing is, if the hitting is struggling, or if he, like, mentally or physically cannot do it, they're going to cut pitching out first. And they're going to say, all right, you're going to be playing 162 games versus just 35. Like, that's the way that they're going to look at it.
My question is, his leash is going to be so short that I don't even think he's going to have a chance. Because when you get to pro ball, a lot of guys face a transition problem where it takes a little bit to get used to the next level. I mean, look at it. Paul Skeen, I mean, I'm not saying Paul Skeen is struggling or anything, and Dylan Cruz struggling a little bit. Wyatt Langford is the first one in the big league of those three. It's literally some guy transitions quick, some guys are in a different organization. So I think it's not going to be fair because Ohtani already did it for so long at a high level in Japan. Big league teams were like, okay, we got it. If he struggles at the plate, it's fine. It'll come around. There's enough data to show that he can do it. They're not going to – Cags will never get that opportunity. So I think it's unfair. I think if he went to –
So what you're saying is Cags should be put in Japan for a few years and do both.
He had a higher chance of doing both in the big league if he were to do that. Correct.
I mean, that's not too much of a hot take. No, I was kind of joking around.
You know how they are. You know how they are. They're going to change some mechanics in his pitching. They're going to try to change something in his hitting. They can't help themselves. That's what they do. And he's going to struggle to do both. If they just let him go and do both like he's been doing for 3 years at Florida, he has a better shot of doing it, but they can't help themselves.
Well, I don't want to speak on any organizations in MLB.
No, but just in general. Like, that's what I'm expecting to happen. He's going to struggle twice in pitching, three times in pitching. And they're going to be, oh, that's enough. No more. That's enough. Go hit. And it's like, dude, he just barely – he didn't even get a shot.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. But this brings up the conversation. Is Cags – like, should he be the favorite to win the Golden Spikes? Or – you're looking at a guy like Charlie Condon, who, again, just massive weekend, 17 homers. I mean, we still have 35 games left-ish. It's crazy. Like, he's going to hit over – he's going to break Cags' record from last year. He's well on pace, too.
Let me ask you this. Is the Golden Spike the most valuable player to one of the best teams in the country? Or is it just the best statistical season?
It's neither. It's the most outstanding amateur baseball player. That's what it says.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody's more outstanding than pitching 6-7 inning the one run ball at Alec Box Stadium, going 1-for-3 with the home run and doing it week in and week out. Like, there's nothing more outstanding than that. So how can Charlie Condon even compete with that?
I completely agree, but it's the same idea of like LeBron James could have won the MVP in the NBA every single year because you take him off his roster and they suck. We have become immune to the amazing.
Yep.
Like, what Cags is doing is what he did last year, and you're like, oh, man, this guy's so sick. Condon's a new household name. Condon's in over 500 2 weeks into it. Like, this is stupid stuff.
Okay.
So I agree with you. Of course. There's nobody on the planet that can do what Jack Cags is doing. But what Condon is doing is Chris Burke, like, there's this idea of, like, letting the moment breathe in a broadcast. Him laughing at Condon's homer that cleared the batter's eye to win it was so beautiful. So, shout out to Berkey for letting that moment happen because what he's doing right now is nuts.
No, it's crazy stuff. I think it'll all figure itself out, to be honest. Like, it's way too early to crown somebody the favorite. Or, I mean, maybe not crown the favorite, but crown somebody the Golden Spikes. I mean, what Travis Bazzana is doing right now at Oregon State is crazy. Four straight games with a leadoff homer. Just catalyst of that offense, putting up 12 runs a game. There's several other guys. Like, Hagen Smith, what he's doing is Paul Skeens-esque. Chase Burns, what he's doing is what Paul Skeens did. There's so many players out there across the country that are putting up these ridiculous stat lines and look like the most outstanding player. For me, though, like, Jack Caglione is doing it from both sides of the ball right now.
Let me give you another reason why Jack Cag is the Golden Spikes, nobody else has a chance. Peyton Tolley doesn't even hit on Fridays anymore because he can't handle doing both.
Yeah,
he was shoved on Friday though.
But he can't hit. Right? He's not hitting anymore on Friday.
That's fine.
You get the eight because it is so hard to do, and Jack Cag does it every damn weekend.
Yeah, CG Shuddy for Tolley, though, and the Frogs in a much-needed win.
He did great, but that's not the point I'm trying to make here. He is not even hitting on the games he pitches anymore.
Dude, we've got three guys in this podcast, one that pitched, two that hit. None of us or even an iota of what this guy can do, and he can do it fucking both at the most elite level. There's no arguing that he's the most athletic, incredible human being on the planet. Size 17 shoe. Yeah, I understand he's letting it hang all over the forehead of college baseball right now. The guy's crazy.
I agree. Let's talk about our trip. How do I want to phrase this? We did something that was so last minute. I obviously had to do some work up in North Carolina for my full-time job. Shout out to Team Funded. If you're interested in doing fundraisers for high school, travel ball, or middle school, doesn't matter. Or college. We do colleges too. Email me, ben@teamfunded.com. I've been helping out people all across the Southeast. Actually, all across the country. But anyway, so I had to do some work up in North Carolina. And Jack had to do a broadcast at NC State Duke on Friday. And it just kind of worked out where I was able to do some work and visit some ballparks I've never seen before in those areas. And Jack got to do his full-time job of broadcasting on ACC Network. But the point I want to make, it lined up perfectly. After work Thursday, drove up to Wake Forest, Winston-Salem, got to see the couch in person, beautiful ballpark. Small, but it looks bigger in person than it does on TV. Center field looks actually like pretty deep, and there wasn't as many BP homers as I expected. But we got to see Wake Forest against Louisville. Jack did an awesome interview with Coach Dan McDonald, gave him like a ton of time. Like they chatted for a long time, plus did a 5-minute interview. It'll be released sometime this week. And so that was a cool experience getting to meet the legend Dan McDonald. But to sit down and see this Wake Forest team in person has me buying back into them. Like, they are a bunch of, like, freak athletes. They can really hit the ball. The bullpen looked much better this weekend. I think this is a perfect time to buy high or buy low on Wake Forest because I think they're about to turn it around. Rough couple weeks to start ACC play, but they looked back to form at home. But I guess the point that I want to make, we started there Thursday for that Louisville game. Got to meet some awesome 11.7 fans. We got to meet Micah from Fifth Quarter ACC. He runs a website, podcast, and everything. He was wearing the Wake Forest tee. We saw him in the concourse. That was a cool moment. And sat with him behind home plate at his seats. And after the game, we got to go interview, you know, Wake Forest players and sit in the press room with Coach Walter. And that was just a cool experience for me. And we kind of parlayed that into morning, going down the street, like early in the morning, like 8 a.m. before I had to go do some stuff at work. We got to go drive down the road to High Point University and meet with Coach Hammond there. Joey Hammond, absolute legend, like future Power 5 coach, in my opinion. But High Point's campus, if you guys are not aware, might be the most beautiful campus in America. Like, it is high dollar, super rich, awesome campus, great baseball facilities, one of the best mid-major baseball facilities I think out there in the country, with the locker rooms, the clubhouse, the weight room, field, playing surface, everything was awesome. And from there, I had to go do some work towards the Raleigh, like Greenville area. So we went, took Jack to his ACC broadcast with Darren Vaught, another person I've known him on Twitter for 5 years. Finally got to meet him in person. Jack got to call a game with him, and that game was fun. We got to see Sam Heifel shove. We got to see Jonathan Santucci, like, in person. It was cool. It was a great moment. And then from then we hung out with my buddy from high school for a little bit, and then went over to the UNC Georgia Tech series. So in Chapel Hill. So that's kind of the rundown of what we did. Came back home, but let's kind of touch on this. Jack, is there anything the audience needs to know about your experience this week? Because you got to go to some ballparks you've never been to either, and interview some really cool people on your own time. Like, Pencil Talk was hopping, apparently. Yeah.
Seaver King is a bona fide big leaguer. Like, that was
bought in on Seaver King.
Oh, he just oozes big leaguer. Like, and he was super down to earth and, like, was really brutally honest about, like, yeah, we're just trying to find our identity. Like, that's why they bleach the hair. Like, we're just trying to be us. That was really cool, like, to get that honesty. And, like, they're working through it, and you're like, oh, it's coming. He hit a ball 117 miles per hour to right center field. Like, that was crazy.
He's one of the guys that when you meet him in person and, like, look at him in his eyes, he is a future Major League Baseball player. Like, you can just tell the presence is there. Athletic ability is there. He had an unbelievable game that day, too. But, I mean, I think he's Mookie Betts 2.0. Play him in center field. Play him at shortstop. Play him at second. Play him at third. It doesn't matter. Like, he can play anywhere on the field. He's the best athlete. He was a cool one to meet and talk to in person.
Yeah, he was sweet. Coach Hammond at High Point was awesome the next morning. They were super, like, allowing us to be accessible. So if you're a mid-major school and you want us to come show love to your program, you're talking to three mid-major guys. Like, we want to help tell your story. Let us come. We got to meet some of the most interesting people. Cale Chatham, he might be the next big South Shohei. Jack Cags can't hold Cale Chatham, the LaGrange guy. He walks up to Star Wars. This is our guy. And then we got to interview a young man by the name of the Redneck Ichiro. That interview coming out next week as well. I can't even begin to give you the Spark Notes version of that interview. You'll just have to go watch. And then, yeah, parlaying that into my first ever ACC Network broadcast was really cool. Santucci goes 5 2/3 of no-hit baseball. Hypothetically, may have walked 7, but we're not too worried about that. No-hit baseball. And NC State, like, gets a big-time series victory over a top-10 Duke team. And that, to me, kind of served as, like, the theme of really everywhere in the country, which was teams getting their teeth kicked in a week before, showing up and winning these massive weekend sets that you kind of felt like the sky was falling. Oh, wait, we're okay. Sam Highfield retained his possession as mayor of Raleigh. Told DJ Burns to back off. No basketball talk.
Makarevich was a cool dude. Oh, real cool dude.
Makarevich was a great interview. The East Carolina transfer leading the country in RBIs right now. But getting to talk to Ben and I, like, big fan of the brand. We're a big fan of his before we even, like, getting to know him. But what a, like, a super genuine, authentic dude of, like, I just wanted to, like, try to grow a little bit and see what would happen. So talking to him was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then, hey, I'll say this right now, like, you know, briefly yesterday, seeing the UNC field and UNC's campus, dude, I mean, that's as big time as it gets. Like, Chapel Hill, it kind of blew me away. Now, listen, NC State's field was really cool. Wake Forest's field was really cool. UNC almost felt like they had a minor league field on campus, right across from dorm rooms, and it was like everything was so compact together. You just walk across campus, it's right there. I mean, it was top notch.
Think about the history of that campus, though. Michael Jordan graced those campus grounds. Like, a lot of big time people have been walking down those sidewalks.
It's crazy because Drew Bayless might have been the greatest athlete to ever walk on that campus. He was peppering balls over the scoreboard. It was insane in BP.
He was crazy. Rizga, I'm so glad you brought that up. We're on FaceTime with Dimitri while we're at the Bosch. Ben and I are just kind of taking it in. I got to play there once. Ben's kind of his first trip, but, like, getting to really, like, soak it in. And then you see him, like, even roll out for BP and the Carolina Blue. And, like, when you close your eyes and you think of the college experience, I know so many schools in North Carolina are probably hating on us for, like, blowing North Carolina's tires right now. But it's true. Like, it is such a college campus. Football, basketball, baseball are all within walking distance. The dorms are right there.
Are you talking about Honeycutt?
Well, no, I'm just talking about the school in general.
No, but you were talking about Honeycutt, right?
Well, and then you get to a guy that is, like, quite literally, like, the all-American American. Yeah. And Vance Honeycutt, the flow, the center fielder. I'm not going to touch on it. If Ben wants to, he can. The ball he hit out was hit 130 miles per hour. No one can tell me it was hit any less. Like, he's a freak. They were fun. Georgia Tech's going to be great, by the way. They got a lot of really young studs. And I'm excited to see what they do. I mean, Burris is crazy, but the guys around him are really good too. But, Ben, you're a big Honeycutt fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm glad Jack brought this up. So I'm like, known as being the jinx, right? Like, I'm the guy that you go to if you want the opposite to happen. And, you know, he's over the – a couple games, like, some scouts got familiar with, like, my face and they saw me and they would ask, like, are you a skier? Like, what are you doing here? Like, oh, I'm just stopping by. I want to see the facilities real quick. I'm in the area. Love college baseball. You know, you start talking to them and then, you know, it, sure enough, it leads to like, all right, yeah, like, you know what you're, what, you know what you're doing, but you're not a scout. But like, what do you think about some of these guys? Like, they're like, oh, you run a college baseball page. That's cool. What do you think about, like, I was sent here from Philadelphia to go watch Vance Honeycutt in person. You know, my boss wanted me to come down here. Like, that's the conversation. So, man, I had the balls to say, you know what? Like, I think Vance Honeycutt is one of the guys that, like, you, he's an athlete. Like, he's definitely a guy that can get there at the next level. I just say I'm not as big of a buyer on him as I feel like a lot of people are. Like, I think there's still a lot of doubts in pro ball, like, once he gets there, because he's inconsistent with the swing sometimes. Like, he takes a completely different swing, like, at bat to at bat. Sometimes he looks comfortable, sometimes he doesn't. And I said last year he didn't make the adjustment from the freshman to the sophomore year. You know, I'd like to see him, you know, get back to like what he was his freshman year at the plate and make adjustments to the pitching. Well, like, I couldn't even finish my sentence, and he hits a ball deadline, 8 feet off the ground the whole way for a two-run homer. And, like, the scout just kind of looked at me, smiled, and was just like, all right, dude, thanks for your input, but I think I'm going to trust my own eyes. So, yeah, I got humbled pretty big.
Hey, there. Dude, your yeah. 2 seconds of an MLB scout just came and went so fast.
No, hey, all kidding aside, walking around and having those conversations, Demetri, you and Ben both, like, you could do that job tomorrow. Like, I love to tell the stories of it. I don't have, like, the historical knowledge, and I know the game, but, like, the names piece, you two could do in a heartbeat. Like,
I think what I was saying as he hit that homer was, yeah, I got him as, like, a Drew Stubbs type, like a really good college player, freak athlete, maybe not an MLB All-Star. And I'm just like, dang it, dude. I can never get out of my own way.
No, but you know what you did say, though, which was true. So, Demetri, when we FaceTimed you and we were like, I think for anyone who's listening to us at this point in this game is a diehard college baseball fan too. Like, we're walking around like their Hall of Fame room, which is basically all of their pro guys, every first through third rounder, anyone who's ever made a 40 man, like. And we're just like kind of like we're like giddy. It's like a kid on Christmas morning. And we're looking at the bats from the College World Series and like Matt Harvey's game wore an All-Star game jersey. And all these guys, Ackley and Miller and Colin Moran and Sky Bolt and all these guys. And Ben kind of ushered in this idea of like Ohio State quarterbacks are really talented and they win Heismans. And like Troy Smith never played it down as a starting quarterback. There was this idea, right? Until there's a CJ Stroud, you just don't know. Like there hasn't been like a North Carolina like freak.
I said, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up too, Jack. I said there hasn't really been. There might not have been a North Carolina like UNC player MLB.
Ken Astros legend Ken Emanuel.
Yeah,
well, Ken Emanuel. No, but I'm saying position player. Okay. Like there hasn't been a North Carolina position player that I can think of. There might have been some all-stars other than Kyle Seager.
Yeah, Seager's probably the most successful North
Carolina. I mean, I think Dustin Ackley had a perfectly great career.
That's what I'm saying, though. But, like, most of the UNC guys that get drafted in the first round, second round, are the Colin Morans, the Dustin Ackleys, the Jacob Stallings. Like
Andrew Miller?
Position players, Demetri. Oh. Position players. The pitchers are fine. I mean, look at Zach Gallen and – Matt Harvey, like those guys were awesome all-stars, like Cy Young contenders, but the position players don't really pan out the way like they're Ohio State quarterbacks.
Dude,
that is so unfair though. Hold on, Jack. That is so unfair to compare the Ohio State quarterback to the careers of Dustin Ackley and Corey Seager. Like we're talking NFL bust and very serviceable big leaguer.
Like, yeah. Well,
We're not talking Juan Soto's and Aaron Judge's and Mike Trout, like careers once in a lifetime.
Here's what we'll sum up. Because again, this was a trip for both of us. Like, hey, we're doing a little prospecting and scouting for where we can do some college game day, fill out the cultures, create some relationships we can cultivate and dominate this space. Everything we heard from everyone outside of Chapel Hill, they're the Yankees. They're the Lakers. They're the Cowboys. It's the Tar Heels. That's how everyone views them. So that's what he kind of meant as like, I want, like, if they're the Yankees, why haven't we gotten like a Mike Trout or a Harp? Like, I didn't think that's kind of what I want, a superstar, right? I want an all-star. That's kind of what he meant, because that really is. And I don't mean it as a bad thing.
I mean, they are the Carolina Tar Heels, not
just everyone in the state. If you're not wearing Carolina blue, you're probably hating the guys in Carolina blue, is what we kind of picked up on, honestly.
You want to know something funny about this? I was talking to an East Carolina guy, I want to say about a year ago. So many people in the Carolinas hate North Carolina for this reason, especially East Carolina, because East Carolina, they're like, oh, they're the teacher. They teach our CEO. They teach our doctor. The people that go to East Carolina teach us. They are our service people for us to go make a lot of money. And the people at Carolina are the richie. They go to the country club, while the East Carolina people go to the suburb. They live in your little neighborhood. Stuff like that. So there's this stigma that Carolina people are the snobby, asshole-ish country club people, while everybody else is your making a difference in society kind of thing, like making an impact, or what, if you will. So that's the stigma I've learned about Carolina.
You can make the same like comparisons like Texas colleges, like the same things with the University of Texas versus, you know, everybody hates Texas, but then you have like Texas Tech, TCU, A&M, Baylor, like they all don't like each other, but they all hate Texas. Like that's the thing. So it's the same thing. I'll tell you this, like I didn't meet any, like everybody in Chapel Hill that I met, everybody around the stadium, everybody in the stadium, they were the nicest people in the world. Like let us in, open arms, come on in, like y'all. It was just a cool experience. I liked it a lot.
Let me say this too, because I feel like we painted this generalized stereotype. Duke is known as the intellects, the brilliant, the doctors, the lawyers, and the rich, right? 70,000 a year. Yet there's a reason they put on a hard hat when they hit home runs. Chris Pollard has built a blue collar program. North Carolina is the same way. Getting to talk to some of the scouts upstairs, we learned stories, right? Love the story piece of it. Can't be overstated enough. They got a kid, Anthony D'Onofrio, right? Honeycutt, and the five-star catcher, Stevenson, all these dogs, right? But Anthony D'Onofrio, who's like 23, he's a fifth year, but he's got 3 years of eligibility. He's a Northeast guy, has got a story that we have to find a way to get him on Club Roma and talk about. Moves home to be closer to family, is cut multiple times, just needed one shot to go crazy. Does he gets his shot and he transfers into Chapel Hill, and now he's a guy that's on the like the stadium game day packages. He's hitting in the heart of the lineup. Like they've got a lot of that blue collar too that I think they wear as a chip on their shoulder. Like, oh, they think we're pampered. Watch this. We're gonna beat the shit out of you now.
Yeah, that is a cool story. Like he goes JUCO to Quinnipiac to like has nowhere to play. Emails, can I walk on at UNC? Boom, gets a spot. Now he's everyday player for him. Cool story.
Should we go back into baseball? Because that was super fun. But like,
I want to touch on one more thing. Dude, I think I want to move to North Carolina. It was the coolest experience. Like it would be easy for me to do my day job there. Obviously there's so many schools, so many people in the North Carolina area, but the thing that we're getting close to is an 11.7 group is like, we need to find a place where we can anchor down and like have a, you know, like a be around a bunch of schools, right? And North Carolina might be the best state for that. As far as like everything is 30 minutes away. Like you could go to 12 different Division I schools and it's like an hour, 30 minutes, an hour and a half. Like you can go from Winston-Salem to Greenville all the way across the state and pass 12 to 13 Division I colleges with baseball. It was a cool experience. I'm not saying I'm going to move to North Carolina, but if you're a baseball fan, college baseball fan, and you don't know where to live, like North Carolina's the spot. And you can go up to Virginia. You can go down to, I mean, Charlotte's right there on the South Carolina border. You can go right to Columbia. It's like, it's nuts how many cool, like cool baseball stadiums and baseball programs you can see all like within an hour radius. So that's my spiel. We can go back to baseball now. Oh, wow. I left you guys speechless.
I was. It was that.
Oh, good. I was waiting for my lead host here to lead us forward.
Yeah, let's get back into baseball. What are you guys' thoughts on? We'll skip ahead and then we'll backtrack. But Hunter Hines getting bumped by an umpire after today's game, strike three. or was it yesterday? My days are mixed up. But strike three, he questions the call, game over, umpire takes off his mask and actually initiates contact with Hunter Hines. Like, that's a bad move. That umpire should not umpire anymore in the SEC. Like, go back to the mid-majors for a couple of years. That, you cross the line there. That's my opinion.
I think it was the two-party incident. Hunter Hines was kind of staying in his lane, waiting for it, getting in his face. Umpire was like, yo, get the fuck out of my way. I'm out of here. Game's over. So he was – I don't want to put 100% blame on the umpire, but it is his job. Just like head coaches do, they come running out and start arguing. They move forward and backward to avoid contact with each other. That guy didn't avoid it, but I don't want to say he 100% initiated it. He just didn't avoid it. He was okay with making contact with him, so that's wrong. But overall, I don't think it's that big of a deal. That's just my opinion.
I saw it the same way, Dimitri. I really did, because it looked like it. I hear bump, and I was like, oh, it got kind of gnarly. But I also look at it from the other side of the aisle as well, where if Hunter Hines had initiated it, like if it was so clearly like he walked into him, he's donezo. Like, he's looking at at least a month suspension, at least. So I'm like, there's a double standard. He's the adult. Get the hell out of the way. He clearly had made it about himself, which I think leads us into another conversation that's going rampant right now with dudes getting yabbo'd, hitting walk-offs or hitting homers, getting ejected after games, like after being a walk-off homer. Like, there is just such little feel.
Talk about Colby Branch, huh, at Georgia.
Yeah. I don't understand the rule. Maybe you guys know more about it. I know it's a new rule, but you're not allowed to toss your helmet anymore, like even if it's a walk-off?
No,
is
you are.
Is that the rule?
You are.
So what?
When you're coming home, you can't throw your helmet off at first base, but as you're coming around third base heading home, you can throw it off.
So what did he do to get ejected?
I think it was hit pin. It was
That's stupid. The game's
– I could be totally wrong, though.
Well, I think you're right.
I just don't understand this rule. It doesn't make sense to me. And, like, hopefully somebody can explain it to me. But, like, for me, it's, like, such a gray area. Like, why are we having ejections on a gray area call? Like, it should be, you know, black and white. Like, either you did this or you don't. But you see some games kids get away with pimping homers and others that they don't. So, like, let's maybe fix this. I'm tired of seeing kids get ejected for something that's, like, a subjective call. Yeah. Because they don't know what they can and can't do.
Well, I think that's the entire point, right? Like, there's clearly, not to call it a specific umpire, there's clearly, I say epidemic, there's clearly initiative going across the country where guys are being told to umpire and officiate these games in a specific way to tighten it up from a showboat standpoint. And that's why Jay Johnson got ejected from that game earlier today on Sunday. Right?
Jones. It's not the umpire. It's the NCAA saying, hey, here's the rule book. Yeah. Enforce this rule book. And they
That's my point. But they're not even handing the rule book. They're highlighting this gray area of objectify this moment. And if it deems unfit, you have the ability to can guys. But that's where, like, a lot of hitters and I saw people are kind of going up in arms about, like, Garrett Gainey's celebration after the big win against Vandy. They're like, oh, we can't, like, mow down your entire dugout, but, like, I can't, like, bad flip and take a look. I think it's all good. Garrett Gainey didn't do it at the Vanderbilt dugout. He did it at his boys. Like, there was clearly, like, some choreography down in the locker room all about it. But today when Bear Jones goes yard at the box and Heyman's got words for him coming around first base, and then Cags takes a little bit of an initiative on the mound to make that impression felt, and then he's brushed back, hits a backside donger. Like, the game always has policed itself, just like it did today at LSU. Why the hell do we have to have guys who've probably never put on a pair of spikes feel the need to put themselves in the middle of everything? That's the biggest problem, I think.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I need somebody to sit down and explain it to me like I'm 5 years old. Like, what is the rule? And, like, do the players know the rule? Because if it is, like, a black and white rule, like, you literally cannot throw your bat in the air after a home run, like, all right, then now it's on the players. But if it's, like, if it feels like, you know, if the rule says, like, if the umpire finds it justifiable that it was initiating controversies or whatever. Like, I don't know the right word.
The word they hide behind is unsportsmanlike.
Unsportsmanlike. If it's that, like, we just need to get rid of the rule or fix it. I'm tired of just seeing kids get ejected for inconsistent patterns in umpiring. Somebody can do it, but others can't. Like, it's stupid. Yeah. But let's talk about that series real quick. A&M bounces back at home. It got a little, like, I was expecting A&M to win the first two games and maybe Mississippi State, you know, win on Sunday. But the A&M lineup showed me a lot. Like, they're a good team. They lost to Florida, obviously, last weekend, 2 out of 3, but they still put up a really good fight. And we said, like, if they could have hit with runners in scoring position at Florida, they definitely win the series, in my opinion. They just couldn't drive the runs in home. Like, they had runners on. But I also want to say on the other side, like, Mississippi State not getting swept on the road. That's the formula, right? Like, you'll be right in the thick of things in the SEC if you win your home series and you don't get swept on the road. You'll be fine. So, all in all, I think it was exactly how we figured it would happen. A&M would win 2 out of 3. But, yeah, no other comments for me on that. Like, it was a good series.
I think this weekend showed me more, not so much about A&M. We knew they're good. But I think it showed me more about Mississippi State. They're going to be a force. I'm not going to say they're going to win the SEC West or anything. But I think that's a postseason team. As of today, they will be in the postseason as a 2-seed somewhere. They won't host.
You want to know what's scary? If the season ended today, 13 of the 14 SEC teams would be in the tournament. Everybody's RPI is like in the 20s right now, except for Missouri, who's like 114.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think Mississippi State should hold their heads high. They should be excited for this season, what's to come. I think that's a team that they can get behind and have some fun and success. I really think I'm impressed by them. Like, back-to-back weekends show they're good enough to be a postseason team.
Same thing for Ole Miss, too. I know they got their doors blown off twice at Tennessee, but they found a way to win the game Saturday. And you don't get swept on the road against a really good Vols team. Like, that's I don't want to say it's a win for the weekend, but it's not a loss. Like, you feel good weekend going into the next weekend. So, both of those Mississippi teams are hanging around. Yeah, I think they'll both be in the postseason.
They've mirrored each other so far this entire year. Overreactions from their fan bases after early midweek losses early in the season.
I overreacted. I thought it was fun to do when they got swept by Austin Peay. It's more fun that way, but whatever.
Yeah. Green shoes were on go, though, in that Austin Peay series. We couldn't help ourselves. But, like, again, the SEC has proven that, like, it's really difficult to go win on the road. And you see an Alabama team, you take them out of Tuscaloosa, and Georgia, who's probably going to be a fresh face in the top 25 this week, is like kind of said, oh, wait, watch out for us. Fresh, like, new coaching staff, like, dogs throughout the lineup. I still don't really know about their bullpen, like, but who cares? Like, I don't want to say impossible. Like, every weekend going into SEC play, like, outside of Missouri, I go, just give me the home team moving forward. Like, who? I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, you want to know something scary, boys? I just realized this. After 2021, Mississippi State wins the national championship 2021. The next year, they come in dead last in the SEC. 2022, Ole Miss wins the national championship. Finished dead last in the SEC.
No way. No way.
LSU, right now, has the second worst record in the SEC. One game back from the worst record. If it happens, my God, like that is the biggest coincidence pattern I've ever seen. I'm not saying LSU's going to finish last. Like, they'll be fine, in my opinion. But I'm just saying, 2-4 to start SEC play, plus they have Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Tennessee the next 3 weeks. That ain't easy. That ain't easy.
No, it's not. I think they'll be fine, but food for thought. Could get
out. Just a little food for thought. So
if Arkansas wins the national championship this year, are you suggesting they just, boys, 25, we're packing it in. We're not even going to play.
Hey, I got to say this. Can we get off the SEC? We got to talk about the ACC here.
No, I want to bring up something before the ACC. Because about this time, people turn off our episodes anyway. So this is a no-risk question I'm about to ask. Jack brought this up pre-show. When was the last time that Campbell, Southern Miss, Coastal Carolina, and East Carolina all lost a weekend series in conference the same weekend.
I would just guess 10 years.
There has got to be, I'm not going to look it up. I'm assuming you guys aren't going to look it up, but there is probably a diehard college baseball fan with this answer. If you have this answer, DM us, tweet at us. That is information we need to know, because not only did it make our mid-major top 25 impossible today to do, I mean, these are four cream of the crop mid-major non-power five programs in the country, and they have been for the last, I mean, some of them two decades, some of them a decade. But the Campbell Camels losing two out of three at home to Delaware was a big eye-opener. Now, Delaware's a lot better team than people might think. They actually have some really good talent. So, but still, inexcusable. Like, Campbell's got to win at home two out of three against Delaware. Southern Miss looked really bad against Georgia Southern that first game. They got run ruled, lose the series. Statesboro is a tough place to play. People know that. Coastal Carolina losing two out of three against App State, almost getting swept. Had to come back and win an extra. Yeah, had to come back and win in extras. That caught me off guard. And then East Carolina losing two out of three on the road to UTSA. That's a trap place to play, first of all. UTSA Stadium's like kind of, it's getting better, but it's ultimately like Texas high school baseball stadium. Like, that's kind of what it looks like on average. Maybe the environment got to ECU. Maybe UTSA is finally hitting the stride that a lot of people expected this year. Because I think they will be good. They've had some bad losses early in the year, but all four of them losing the same weekend in conference play is nuts to me.
Add Santa Barbara to that list.
And dude, Santa Barbara too. Santa Barbara loses two out of three to Cal Poly. The team that couldn't score a run against Texas all weekend. Cal Poly did not score a single run against Texas in 27 innings.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if all of those losses, the biggest shocking one would be Campbell losing at home to Delaware. I'm sorry, but, like, you don't lose at home to Delaware. I don't care if Delaware had a Friday night guy that threw 99 miles an hour. I don't care. You cannot lose series at home to Delaware. Georgia Southern, they're a good team. They're a middle of the pack, upper tier pack of the Sun Belt. Coastal Carolina, App State had been playing well. Last year, they had a good team. They made a little run in the Sun Belt tournament. This year, they're a good team. Are they top 25 worthy or mid-major? They're coming. We're paying attention. It happened. Santa Barbara, Cal Poly. I mean, Cal Poly is not a terrible team either. Are they great? No. But when you look at – when you think of Delaware, they have no business being on the same field as Campbell.
I'm going to check you, and the only reason I will is because I saw them last year. The Sun Belt's almost like the SEC. Like, it's so difficult to go play on the road in the Sun Belt, so that's why. I think that this was a situation where Campbell is going to have to, like, go into weekend series a little bit more prepped. I played in the Big South. Campbell could go drink 35 beers on Thursday night, wake up on Friday morning, beat the shit out of us in the Big South. And they probably did.
I mean, yeah.
Hey, yo, Delaware's got a four-hole third baseman. That was a first team. Like he was the third base freshman. I mean, he was a freshman All-American. Joey Loind is his name. He's a stud. He hits piss missiles. I just think that Campbell probably this weekend goes, oh, this is a different conference. Like, this is a different level of baseball. So I think it's going to serve as an eye-opener and go, all right, like, hey, we need to, like, strap it up a little bit. You know, let's prep maybe a little bit cleaner. I don't know what that looks like or what happened this weekend, or maybe if they caught him off guard. But Delaware's a better baseball team than you think. They finished, I believe, fourth in the CAA tournament last year. They beat the College of Charleston at home on their field with Cole Mathis, this first rounder on the mound. So, like, they're a better team than you might think. I just think it's the CAA going, hey, welcome to it. I think they're a top seven conference in baseball, but, like, welcome to it a little bit.
For sure. All right, now we can jump into the ACC. We already kind of talked about Wake Forest. We talked about NC State. NC State with a huge statement weekend, winning two out of three at home against Duke, including that seven-run comeback, which was unbelievable. North Carolina sweeps Georgia Tech. It's weird. Like, the ACC has so much parity.
Hey, one more theory. Bring up one more theory. You're forgetting one.
Hold on. Let me finish my thought, dude.
Nope. Mention the other theory.
Relax. I'm getting there. I'm just saying there's so much parity with And Georgia Tech sweeps NC State last week. NC State, I mean, when Duke wins the series last week as well, but then Duke loses 2 out of 3 at NC State. Georgia Tech gets swept by UNC. It's like a parody league, just like the SEC and just like the rest of college baseball. What series were you? Oh, we already talked about Clemson, Florida State. Is that the one? Oh, Miami. What happened in that Miami series, Dimitri? I'll let you have the floor.
No, you tell me.
I don't watch.
I know you know the result of it. Just tell me what happened in that series.
I refuse.
Are you confused?
Miami's still a fun team. They're still a fun team. You can't argue that. They had to go to South Bend, Indiana, and play against Notre Dame. That's not the environment
they thrive. Notre Dame team that entered the weekend 0-6 in ACC play.
That's not where Miami thrives, all right? Get those boys in some warm weather in a hostile environment, and they will win ball games.
They tried with Florida. They couldn't do it then either. Okay, anyway, all right, joke's over, fun's over. I told you, this Miami team.
I can't say I told you after one weekend.
But I knew it was coming. It's been happening for the last 10 years.
One weekend.
It's the same thing every year, Ben. It's the same thing every year. We play well at home. The moment we have to go on the road, we stink. And the moment the calendar turns to May and June, we stink. It is what it is. Until if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, they call you a psychopath expecting different results. So that's my point. Like, it's just the same thing over and over again. They almost got swept. They were down like 8-1 today and made a huge 7-1, made a huge comeback. They almost got swept. Like,
this is an exciting, fun team to watch. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
I never said they're going to win the national championship.
Ohio Valley?
What?
Nothing.
No, I never said that Miami is going to win the national championship. I've said for the last 3 weeks, Miami is a team that is fun. They're youthful, so they're going to get better as the season goes on. And you don't want to see them in your regional, especially if you're a place like Alex Box Stadium.
You do want to see them in your regional.
Huh?
You do want to see them in your regional.
No, you don't. They're going to thrive off the environment.
They will beat them.
Nope. They're going to thrive off that environment. Dude, this is a high-energy team.
I don't know why you're arguing with me. I know this shit like the back of my hand.
And I'm going to tell you that this is going to be different. This year's different.
I hope so.
All right, we've spent way too much time on Miami.
Okay, let me breeze through the Commonwealth of the ACC. We did say it 2 weeks ago. Virginia Tech's 8-1 in the ACC, and they got Pitt coming up. Virginia just swept Pitt, gritty Pitt, Grittsburg. I mean, it was fun. I think they were kind of frisky early. They're going to struggle in the ACC this year. Virginia's another team that, like, you're not going to know a ton about them. I get to see them up close and personal this week, but they're going to go back to a super regional somehow. Like, no doubt. They're a walking supers team at this point. So shout out to O'Connell, what they've done. But Virginia Tech, if they go sweep Pittsburgh, you're going to be like, yo, they're 11-1, and they've given themselves a ton of comfort when they get into like kind of the nitty gritty, and they built up a ton of confidence. Demartini hits his 13th yak. Blacksburg's getting weird. There's something weird happening up there.
100%. Yeah, you called it 2 weeks ago. You were like, their ACC schedule is a little soft to start. They might be 10-2, 11-1 by the time they get into the meat of it. So, but every win matters in the ACC. I mean, we can look at the standings right now. It's a jumbled mess. I mean, obviously, there's a few teams like Virginia Tech that separated themselves. I have it pulled up right here. Let's see. You know, Clemson 5-1, Virginia Tech 8-1, North Carolina, UNC 7-2 after sweeping Georgia Tech. But then you get a lot of like 5-4s, 3-3s, 4-5s.
Carolina with back-to-back sweeps, by the way, after losing the opening weekend at Miami.
Yeah. But yeah, you look at it like North Carolina, like they look like a super regional, possible Omaha team. We saw them in person. I think they're another team that's going to get better as the year goes on. Virginia, like explosive offense. Like they could be possibly like 9-0 in ACC play if they had any sort of bullpen for those games that they lost. They scored a bunch of runs in those games. I'm still a believer in Georgia Tech. I'm still a believer in Duke. Georgia Tech's 3-3. They sweep, get swept. But they're going to play well at home, and they're going to score way more runs at home than on the road. Duke's the same way. Like Duke, you look at them, physically like huge player. Like they're just a big, strong team with good arms. They lose two out of three this weekend. They should have won two out of three. They blew an 8-run lead in the ninth. So that record could be way different. And then like Florida State, Wake Forest, we already know about them. Super talented. NC State, big statement win this weekend. The ACC is going to be a lot of fun. I think this is going to be like a 6 or 7 team race to see who wins it.
I agree.
Yeah. The Big 12 is interesting too. We can talk about the Big 12 and how TCU is 2-7 to start Big 12 play. That's not good, boys. That's not good. And one of those wins was Peyton Tolley putting his nuts on the table, going complete game shutout. But yeah, are you just worried about TCU?
I don't think it's the same thing as last year. I don't think you're winning the Big 12 starting 2-7. Excuse me. That means they need 2 sweeps this year just to make up for the rough start. Can it be done? Sure, but I just don't think so. I mean, let's see. Who do they have left? They've got
Houston, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Texas, Kansas State, Baylor. All right.
Let's just say they go 2-1, 3-0, 5-1, and then 2-1 against Texas Tech, 5-1, 7-2. They're at 9-9 again. They're right at 500 heading into their final four Big 12 series. So they could be just fine. I just think where should we get that confidence that they're going to do what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, the Big 12 is still super strong. You look at the RPI, like, you know who leads their RPI right now?
Their RPI at 39. I looked
earlier. Is it Kansas State or Oklahoma?
Kansas State. Who's the one? Oklahoma,
UCF had the highest RPI in the conference.
It's not Kansas State?
UCF has 6.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Yeah. I keep forgetting they're in the damn Big 12.
And they're 4-5 in conference, which is – like middle of the pack.
Yeah. But that's, and I know we'll do the previews next week, but to me, Kansas State's a team that you're getting Tyson Neighbors back, who I think we've brought up almost every podcast, but we're just so excited about what he brings to that team. That they've got Texas this weekend. Texas is another team like TCU that, like, if they can get it rolling, like, it feels like the pitching's been really good at times, and then the bats show up and then the pitching disappears, similar to TCU, like this last weekend, where like, the arms look good and then the bats disappeared. And if they can just put it together, but can Kansas State kind of stick it out until they get back to being really healthy towards maybe the middle pack? But the whole conference as a whole is drunk as hell. I don't know a damn thing about Oklahoma. You called them early on, but they got not to the, obviously the best start.
Well, they lost 2 out of 3 this weekend, which was shocking. They lost 2 out of 3 to West Virginia after winning Friday. Like, West Virginia's hanging around, boys. Like 4-2 in the Big 12. They played a pretty tough schedule. Outside of conference too, like I'm looking at their schedule now. Yeah, they won 2 out of 3 against BYU, 1 2 out of 3 against Oklahoma. They got Oklahoma State, Kansas, UCF coming up. Like,
you know what's crazy?
All 3 series.
You know what's crazy? I love that we have the ability to do this year. UCF in the last 3 or 4 years never won the American Athletic. It was always East Carolina. They go into the Big 12 year one through 5 games or 1 game under 500 with 2 series wins. And they blew a game against Oklahoma. So they could easily be 5-4 with 2 series wins their first 3 weekends again. I wouldn't say the worst team. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma are good. And Kansas, they're usually the bottom team. But it just shows you the difference between the upper tier mid-major team and those Power 5 conference is not that much. Now, if you want to talk about the upper tier of those Power 5, like the Oregon State, the Arkansas, and stuff like that. But, like, UCF, East Carolina could easily go into the Big 12 and compete week in, week out, and compete for a conference championship. It just shows you it's not that far. It is really not that far.
You guys want to know something funny? Like, I'm extra proud of the Baylor Bears. And Big 12 fans and college baseball fans are going to laugh at my face. They're 3-6 in the Big 12, but – at one point, they had a 3-game winning streak, 2 games against Texas Tech and Friday night win at Texas. And then you look, they had a 1-run loss, 2 1-run losses at Houston, both very winnable games, and a 2-run loss at Texas Tech, a 2-0 game on a Friday. So it's like Baylor's hanging around. They only have a series win in the Big 12. And you look at their schedule, They have Cincinnati, BYU, and Kansas their next three weekends. Like, Baylor 3-6. Like, they're not going to be – I thought they would win less than 5 or 6 Big 12 games this year. I thought they were that bad. But they're finding ways to win games and even won a series. So, I'm proud of the Baylor Bears. They're going to hang around. They're making this conference way more interesting. And because you look at it, the top 11 teams are separated by 3 games, like at the most. Like, BYU is 4-5, but only 3 games out of first place. Kansas, Houston, Texas Tech, UCF, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Texas, Kansas State, and Oklahoma. Like, that's your top 11 right there. And then you have Baylor and TCU below that.
Yeah.
Cool. Kind of a cool conference.
It is. We've got a little bit of more time here. Wrap it up soon.
Yeah, I don't really want to spend time on the I don't want to spend time on the Big Ten or the Pac-12. What I want to do is what?
Fun Belt.
Yeah, the Fun Belt I think grabs my attention more than those other two conferences, and it's just because of the competitiveness. Like Oregon, Oregon State, they're gonna one of those two teams is gonna win the Pac-12. Like, we all know it. The other, like, the bottom tier teams, like, we thought Cal was a real contender, and they get swept by Utah. Like, Utah's a sneaky team, though. Like, could make it back in the tournament this year for the first time in a while. But, yeah, the Pac-12 is, like, just kind of boring to me right now. Like, it's just such a – I don't know. It's a boring conference. The Big Ten, I think there was no sweeps first week in a Big Ten play. Half the teams are 2-1. The other half's 1-2. So, just way too early to tell.
I'll say something about the Big Ten. Real quick, to the point. Friday night, Brody Breck, Iowa, getting beat by Purdue. Unacceptable. Just brutal. Like, they've been so underwhelming. I believe this podcast may have called that. We also said Indiana was going to be a lot better than they've shown, but Iowa was so fraudulent, it's insane.
Dude, I thought of a theory about Iowa. This Iowa team has a very similar story to that 2019 Michigan team.
Oh, you think?
Because that 2019 Michigan team that finished runner-up in the they came in second. They almost won the whole College World Series. They lost game 3 to Vanderbilt. But they came into the season, that Michigan team, came in the season preseason ranked. They had 2 All-American pitchers in their starting rotation, plus a good third starter. And they went immediately just – it was a crapshoot the first part of the season, if I remember correctly. I don't have anything in front of me, so I'm just doing it off memory. It was the first year of 11.7. We were hanging out on the guys, Tommy Henry. Demetri, do you remember that 2019 Michigan team? How yeah. They came into the season, 2 All-American pitchers, preseason ranked out of the Big Ten, and immediately the first part of the season, they sucked. They were so bad. I think they ended up having to win the Big Ten tournament just to get into the regionals, and then they – were carried by Tommy Henry and Jordan Nwogu and I can't think of the rest of the guys, but they ended up having like the players that were projected to be good ended up being good at the end of the year and almost won them College World Series. I just want to put this in people's head. I have been hating on Iowa since preseason, but the formula and like the story is very similar to that 2019 Michigan team. If Iowa gets in the postseason, you can clear the record books. Like, you can clean every stat and everything from the preseason. I'm not saying they're going to go on a run, but I'm just saying they could be a dangerous team. They
that was a perfect story to make sure that all we've ever done is say, hey, Duke's the number one team in the country. They get beat. We jinx everything. So I'm glad that I could just do the same for Iowa. They're 1-5 in quad one wins in quad one games this year. But they do. I just pulled up their schedule. Illinois State, Minnesota, Bradley, Michigan, St. Thomas, Ohio State. They gave up a 10 spot on Friday night to Purdue. End up winning the series, so you're okay, cool. But
they should be sweeping Purdue.
I know, that's my point. Well, you shouldn't be giving up a 10 spot on Friday. No. Dude, that throws a million. I'm good. I'm glad that they're going to win the national championship, though. That's good news.
Yeah, I just pulled up the 2019 Michigan team. It was preseason ranked. They actually started out pretty good, but then they started losing. Like, got swept to Texas Tech. I'm checking their Big Ten play real fast. They lost 2 out of 3 to Ohio State first Big Ten weekend. Then they swept Northwestern, but that Northwestern team was like historically bad. Well, actually, you know what? They swept. Lost 2 out of 3.
Anyways,
Michigan 2019 Michigan was had a way better record than this Iowa team.
We're turning into a snooze fest of a podcast right now. No offense, yeah. Ben.
What? Dang, dude. Why are you being so mean?
I'm not being mean. I'm just being brutally honest. It's turning into a snooze fest.
I like it.
Anyway, okay. Have some energy here. Big Ten stinks. Pac-12 stinks. Fun Belt doesn't stink. What do you guys think? Louisiana 5-1 in the Sun Belt.
Buyer, right,
seller.
Raging. No, I mean, I think they're a good team. We saw them play. Biggest stage, Minute Maid Park. They looked fine. Record wasn't as good as what the team was playing. But it was that walk-off homer. Was it Sunday or was it Saturday for Kyle DeBarge against Tulane that kind of just rocketed them to a 9-game winning streak or 10-game winning streak since then?
Nope. They're 11-2 since pitcher came off the mound and said, what the fuck are we doing at Minute Maid Park? They're 11-2 since that game.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, they're a good team. Coach Deggs always does a good job. Like, it'll be interesting. There's still so many Sun. There's 8 more Sun Belt weekends left. I know they're 5-1, but I think this is just going to be 8 teams battling it. Like, 8 teams in the Sun Belt could win it. It's going to be.
I think it's going to be a 4-bid league this year.
Yeah, I think it's more than 4. I'm thinking 5.
I think 4. Louisiana is going to have work to do in about a month. About what is it? April 25th. In the next month or so.
And this is a big conference than last year.
Yeah, but you got to remember. Okay, Southern Miss, Coastal Carolina. Those are your 2 locks, right?
Sure.
We can just safe to assume those 2 teams are going to be in the postseason, right? There's 2 more. It's going to be a fight between Louisiana, Troy, and a couple other teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think Southern Miss, Louisiana, Coastal Carolina, Troy, Georgia Southern can get hot. South Alabama looks good.
Speaking of South Alabama, how the hell do you get swept at home by Georgia State and then go win 2 out of 3 on the road at Troy? How does that work?
Because we all pick Troy baseball? And we can pick them.
Baseball?
Well, it's because we said it was going to happen. We all 3 picked Troy and then we can pick them. It was guaranteed for South Alabama to win.
They were saying congrats.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Sun Belt is going to self-destruct. It's going to be a great conference, super competitive. I just think it's going to be really hard for 4 teams to have the resumes of getting out large. It's going to be really hard.
I think it's at least 4. I think 5 teams will get in.
Dude, I mean, maybe. I mean, Southern Miss, Coastal, either or, South Alabama, Troy, and then your Louisiana or Georgia Southern, I mean, Texas State. Like, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard to get more than 4.
We'll see. All right, let's preview the midweek and let's get out of here since it's a snooze fest. I know Tuesday was already, like, going to be an awesome Tuesday. I looked ahead. I know Duke is playing Campbell. I don't know where. Let me pull it up real fast. Oh, okay, it's Campbell at Duke on Tuesday. Coastal Carolina at Clemson on Tuesday. Like, those 2 games are enough, but we got more. There was another big one that I loved.
Coastal,
I was love Santa Barbara at UCLA, but Florida State's the other big one in Jacksonville. I'm excited for that one.
You said Coastal Clemson, right?
Yeah, Coastal Clemson. Do you think that Florida tries extra hard Tuesday against Florida State?
I don't think they try extra hard. I think they just try a normal effort level.
A normal
that should be good enough.
Effort level?
I think Clemson or Florida State is going to go through a little rut as they figure out their bullpen woes. I think Florida wins Tuesday 100%.
100%.
Think about it. Everyone's like, oh my God, Florida can't win on Tuesday. Florida State, they should rebound. Flip the script. Florida wins that game.
Yeah. Well, them trying hard in the midweeks hasn't done shit. So they're done. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple good games, not Super Lotus as a whole, but hey, we'll find out if Lamar is legit or not. They go to Houston Tuesday night, 19-4 on the year, 3-0 Southland Conference play. Are they good or are they not good?
Yeah. Another thing to remember this weekend, because of Easter, I think every team is playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
A lot.
So. For the weekend series, pick 'em contestants. Make sure you get your picks in before Thursday. We'll have them out probably Tuesday this, or no, we'll put them out tomorrow, Monday.
We'll get them out
Monday, and we'll do a pod either Tuesday or Wednesday.
We can do Wednesday like normal.
Wednesday.
All right, we'll do it Wednesday night.
Yep. I just want to say to the listeners, I'm sure there was a bunch of shit that we didn't cover from this past weekend, but we got carried away with a bunch of other fun topics of discussion. I can't think of everything if we covered it all, but that was fun for me.
Yeah. Wait, was it fun? You said it was a snooze fest.
It was turning into a snooze fest.
Oh, okay.
We were so up here, and we were just straight nose diving.
That's what the Big Ten baseball does too. Honestly,
bingo. There it is. That's what happened.
Before we leave, here's my two hypothetical investments this week. One of these top 10 teams will lose. I know the East Carolina is not going to be in the top 10 after last weekend. They play UNCW on Tuesday. That's a big rivalry game. And like UNCW and Randy Hood will go into East Carolina looking to like upset that team that they like don't really love. Another fun one that I'm starting to really gain some traction with. I know I'm an East Coast mid-major guy, but the CAA is a lot of fun. And North Carolina A&T has been raking. They get a big-time conference win against the College of Charleston this weekend down in the low country. They go to Chapel Hill, and I want to see if the Bats play. That could be kind of a weird one, too. Take the over, take the runs. Someone's getting upset this week in North Carolina.
I love it. Well, that'll do it for today's show. We'll be back later this week. Appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate all of our followers. We got a ton of new followers this weekend on Twitter. Hopefully you guys are subscribed to the pod. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Check out our website. A lot of new fun things coming up here shortly. Now that everybody's bracket is busted, it is college baseball season. Right in the thick of conference. So, we'll be around. Y'all reach out to us if you need us. But other than that, we are out. It is past midnight. It is my bedtime. So see everybody.
Appreciate you listening. Bye.